I am Jeremy Dean QC. I have been practicing as a criminal defence barrister since 1983. This series of podcasts spotlights the criminal justice process, a cornerstone of our free and democratic society. I will also be looking at the effects of coronavirus upon the criminal justice system. I will be speaking to prisoners, prisoners' relatives, campaigners, lawyers, and others. Together, we will take a global look at the criminal justice process under the scourge of coronavirus and generally. This is Criminal Justice on Trial.
I have previously interviewed Zara, whose brother Ahmed was detained in a London prison, in our podcast Blind to Coronavirus. Today, I'm pleased to have the opportunity to discuss things with Ahmed himself, Ahmed having recently been released from that London prison. When you entered prison, did you have any specific disabilities?
No, I was a healthy 25-year-old.
And now?
I have gone blind in my right eye and my left eye. On a good day, I would have maybe 40 to 45% vision. I woke up after a year or so, I woke up and I couldn't see anything. At some point, I thought they were deliberately trying to not let me progress and recover properly. One time I was asking someone to, I was trying to dial a phone, a number on the phone, and I couldn't dial it properly because I couldn't see. And then the officer was laughing at me saying, "What's wrong with you?" And I'm telling him, "I can't see, I'm blind."
You were sentenced to a term of 4 years or more. You were not sentenced to go blind.
I feel angry, to be honest with you. It gives me sleepless nights sometimes.
Ahmed, you were released from prison, I think, approximately 1 week ago. Is that right?
Yep, that's correct.
And I'm going to ask you first a bit about yourself. How old are you?
27.
You're 27. We heard from Zara that you come from a very good background. Your father is an extremely educated man. Did you go to university?
Yes, I did go to university, and I was in university up until the time I was incarcerated. I was doing a degree in biomedical science.
We know that you got yourself into some trouble, and I'm going to ask you about that. Which year were you in when that happened?
I was finishing second year and starting third year.
So just in outline terms, you ended up in prison, and we'll come to that in just a moment. You must have committed one or more serious offences to find yourself sentenced to a term of imprisonment. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
And what was the general nature of your offending?
Possession of intent to supply. Yeah, class A and B.
So, try and explain, how does a guy who's studying biomedicine at Kingston University end up in prison?
Wrong choices. I could blame it on the wrong crowd, but I knew what I was doing at the time. And I thought I was probably too smart to get caught, which I wasn't.
And so, ultimately, what sentence did you receive?
4 years, 8 months.
4 years, 8 months in prison.
Yeah.
And having been released about a week ago, mm-hmm. Of that 4 years, 8 months, how much did you serve?
Served half of it.
Right.
Yes, 4 months.
So when you got sentenced to prison, I mean, this must have been totally and utterly calamitous for your father and your family. Is that a fair description?
Yeah, I would say so. I believe my dad had two strokes while I was in there, and I believe they were solely because of me, to be honest, and something I had to live with, I guess.
And were you aware whilst in prison that your father was as ill as we know he now was?
I knew it was progressing to this stage.
And how did it feel for you to know that your behaviour had led your father to suffer multiple strokes?
The magnitude of guilt, I can't really explain it. It's not something light that you can accept, to be honest. But at the time, there was nothing I could do except promise myself that I will never let this happen again.
And just try and describe to us, would you? I mean, here were you. You're obviously a very intelligent, well-brought-up man with a father who's an illustrious figure. We've heard from your sister. She's an extremely likable and intelligent girl. And you end up banged up in a London prison. I mean, how did it feel when the gates closed on you?
To be honest with you, it was a lesson that I needed. I don't think I would have learned what I was doing was wrong any other way. There were plenty of signs, but I refused to see them. When those gates closed, it was clear to me that what I was doing was wrong, and it wasn't my nature to be, or not to say my nature. It wasn't. Like you said, I wasn't brought up to do such things, and my background did not reflect what I did, and my parents deserve more than what I did do. So just
try and describe for us your first few days behind bars, having lost your liberty, lifted out of your home, taken away from Kingston University. What were your first few days in jail like?
Very depressing and hopeless, to be honest. It was a slap from reality, to be honest. To show me that this is what you get if you go down the road that you were going down, and it happened.
Did you understand why you were in prison?
Yes, I did.
And in terms of the mental turmoil of finding yourself in a place where your liberty was restricted, you were locked into a room, you'd suddenly found yourself subjected to orders, effectively lost control of your destiny. How did you respond to that?
I responded, and to be honest with you, I had to accept it, because it was something I deserved. I did do something wrong, so there was no point trying to pretend that I didn't deserve what was happening.
Are you able just to give us a sort of indication of what your day-to-day schedule amounted to in your first few days or weeks in prison?
I'll be behind my door for 23 hours a day, come out for an hour, manage to use the phone if I could, if there was enough time, get a shower if I could, and socialize with other prisoners, and then back to my cell. And then a few hours later, come out again for maybe 20 minutes to get my dinner and go back to my room.
And you were thrown together with people you didn't know in a cell?
Yeah, no, I didn't know who I was with. And sometimes I wouldn't know the nature of their crime. And well, you're mixing with people that are serious criminals, serious crimes.
So I mean, for most people, to be placed in a room which, you know, you can't get out of, with people you don't know who may have committed dangerous offences. I mean, you know, what kind of conversation? I mean, how would you kick off the conversation?
That's a skill I learned. You have to keep an open mind and try very hard not to judge. Conversation, you can start. It's difficult asking, knowing if you can ask a person why he's in prison or not. So there was a lot of silence. The silence will get broken by maybe a joke or something from the TV, and then conversation will flow from there.
And it sounds as if somehow you managed to cope with this, you know, extraordinary development in your life. Is that fair?
Yeah, I did. I honestly, I surprised myself that I was able to cope without going insane or without seriously being in any trouble.
And to what extent would you say that fear was a significant element in your mind?
The fear of physical assault wasn't too much of an issue. The fear of being taken away from my family, my university, was a big element, because I didn't know if after all this was done and I come out, if I was able to return to how things were, pick up where I left off, the good things. And I had, there was a lot of fear of that, and you would think about it all the time, to be honest.
Yeah. And then when your family came to visit you, which I assume they did, is that right?
Yeah, very often.
So when you're confronted with your dad, for example, you know, you're a man, an esteemed gentleman who has, you know, done his best to bring you up and obviously educated you well and taught you manners and, you know, the right standards in life. I mean, how do you look your father in the eye when you've ended up in a London prison?
I couldn't, to be honest with you. It was very difficult. The thing is, you always know your parents love you, so that kind of gave me the comfort or the security to know that I could be forgiven. But for a long time, I couldn't. I didn't know how to look him in the eye. I didn't know how to talk to him. And I just felt very guilty towards them. Fortunately, I'm very grateful for which they were very supportive.
All right. Well, look, Ahmed, I want to move on. And under the general sort of umbrella of prison conditions, I want to ask you about developments when you were in prison. When you entered prison, did you have any specific disabilities?
No, I was a healthy 25-year-old.
And now?
I have gone blind in my right eye, and my left eye, on a good day, I would have maybe 40 to 45% vision. I've got cataracts in that eye, and I suffer from like severe pain, migraines.
When you entered prison, so far as you were aware, did you have any difficulties with your eyes at all?
No, a month prior going to prison, I did get an eye infection. I went to the hospital, got a set of eye drops, and then after a week or two, my eyes were fine and I was back to normal. And that was it. And then when I went on my admission to prison, I was fine and I had no problems.
And now, today, as you discuss things with me, you are totally blind in your right eye.
Yeah, completely.
And your left eye is, did you say 40% blind?
40% vision. So I've lost 60%.
You've lost 60% vision in your left eye. In terms of your treatment whilst in prison, how would you describe the treatment you receive for your eye condition?
Very poor, to be honest with you. At some point, I thought they were deliberately trying to not let me progress and recover properly.
So over what period of time did your eyes deteriorate? I mean, how long had you been in prison when this problem started?
Within the first month I got into prison, the place is dirty, unhygienic. So I got the eye infection again. I raised my concerns to the healthcare team there. I don't know for what reason they didn't believe me. They kept on giving me paracetamol, sending me back to my room. I managed to see the optician at some point, and he was shocked, and he didn't have the correct tools to investigate the issue of my eyes, and he urged the prison to send me to hospital. Every time I would go see him, I would probably see him like maybe once a month, once every 2 months. He was shocked that I still haven't been to the hospital. It took them about a year and 2 months to send me to the hospital.
Now, just if I can just stop you there. You're telling us that it took a year or more for you to get to the hospital to have your eyes, is it tested or treated?
No, just to find out what was going on.
Just to find out what was going on. And over that 1 year period, was your eyesight deteriorating?
I could still read at the start, but it was gradually getting blurry, 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 to the point I woke up after a year or so, and I couldn't see anything, and I had enough, to be honest, at that point. Yeah, so I went to the healthcare team, and I thought I refused to leave the room until they looked at my eye, and it's like I had the plague or something. They would refuse to look at it, and then the emergency doctor came. When he saw it, he immediately put the order in to send me to hospital. And when I did go to the hospital, they kept me there for 5 days.
Right, so you went to hospital in the end. How long after you first started complaining about this eyesight problem?
I can't remember exactly, but they sent me to the hospital maybe within like 6 to 8 months, just for, as it was an emergency, just to see what the situation was.
6 to 8 months after you first complained?
Yeah.
And then to get a proper assessment was more than a year. Is that what you're telling us?
Yeah, yeah.
And over that period of that time, because we're talking about, you know, the seasons changing, the weeks passing by, the year unfolding, were you complaining to the authorities, to the prison officers, to the medical team about your eye condition?
Every day, I've got multiple complaints. Every day I would tell them. I don't know if they just didn't have the time or they just didn't believe me. But it didn't take a rocket scientist to notice that there was something wrong.
How were they reacting? I mean, how were they responding? Let's talk about the prison officers. How were the prison officers responding when it was obvious that your eyesight was deteriorating?
I could say one or two were genuine, and they did try to help, but there was not much they could do at the time. The majority, I think they thought I was lying, and sometimes they would laugh. One time I was asking someone I was trying to dial a phone, a number on the phone, and I couldn't dial it properly because I couldn't see. And then the officer was laughing at me, saying, "What's wrong with you?" And I'm telling him, "I can't see, I'm blind." And that was my memory of that day, to be honest. And he didn't even help me to dial the number or anything. He just left me.
And in terms of the difficulties that you faced as the months went by, things like reading, going about your business, I mean, did the you know, the collapse of your eyesight, did that cause you practical problems?
Yeah, I could not watch TV. I just listened to it. I couldn't read, which is one of the most common things you can do that would kill your time inside. I couldn't fill out my own canteen sheet. I couldn't write if I wanted to write a letter or a complaint or a form or fill out a form. I couldn't do it. I had to rely on the kindness of my soulmate. That's if I had a decent soulmate, which I didn't most of the time. So most of the time, I just wouldn't do anything.
So what do you mean when you say you didn't have a decent soulmate most of the time? What do you mean?
I wouldn't have a soulmate that was understanding and would help, to be honest. Everyone's got their own problem,
right,
which is understandable. And then trying to ask someone, if you're in a cell with a murderer or something, trying to ask them to read out a letter for you or something, and if they take it the wrong way or if they're not bothered, it's just not something you want to be trapped in a room with.
Okay, well, look, you're giving us a very, very stark picture of your circumstances. You're an intelligent guy, you go into prison, your eyesight's fine, you're losing your eyesight, you're not getting treatment from the prison, you're with people who couldn't care less. I just want you to try and paint the picture for us, Ahmed. How on earth, mentally, did you cope with this situation?
I never used to pray before I went to prison. I started praying, and I think that's what kept me a bit sane and calm, to be honest. Because there were times where I just thought of, you know, losing it. But I had realized that would do me no good. And if anything, it would give them more ammunition to say, "Oh, look, he's a violent person. He doesn't obey orders. How can we treat him?" So I just managed to stay calm. And
did you work whilst you were in prison?
I had maybe a job at the start to serving food. I had to leave sometimes. I had to take time off because of my vision. Well, my vision kind of stabilized, and I realized I can do labor work, but I can't read or write. I managed to get a job in reception in the prison, which is for trusted prisoners, and I spent most of my time there, to be honest.
But how were you, someone who'd gone into prison to serve a sentence, fit and able, going blind, losing your eyesight, how were you able to find the motivation to serve food, work in reception, cooperate with the authorities when they were doing nothing for you?
That's a good question. I found a motivation to work because if I'm in my room, I can't read, I can't play Xbox, I can't watch TV, I can't do anything to kill my time. So as I said, the only thing I could do was labor. So just to make my time pass, to be honest with you, and to be out of my cell, I served food. With regards to officers, I didn't have to like them, and all I had to do was just make sure I followed the rules. I didn't have to conversate with them. I didn't have to do anything, but make sure I follow the rules and just keep it straight.
And how were your family dealing with the fact that you were going blind and that nothing was being done about it?
They were furious. The thing is that this is new to them. They didn't know what they could do. At some point, they wrote a letter to the prison, to the governor of the prison, but I think it was too late. By then, I've already lost my vision. They just advised me to write complaints, which I was doing anyway. And as I said, this was all new to them. They didn't know what the protocol to do, what to follow, who to call, who to complain to. And in their best ability, they wrote a letter to the prison.
But, you know, the reality here is that you committed offences. You've told us that you understood why you were sentenced to prison. You were sentenced to a term of 4 years or more. You were not sentenced to go blind. And so now, discussing these matters with me, how do you feel about the fact that the sentence you received from the judge, without, of course, that judge possibly contemplating the situation, led you to lose your eyesight? How do you feel about that?
I feel angry, to be honest with you. It gives me sleepless nights sometimes, but there's nothing I could do but move forward, to be honest. And if I think about it too much, that's how people go crazy. They get caught up in the past. I have to move forward and try, first of all, recover or treat my eye, try to get it better.
Is there any prospect of you recovering sight in either of your eyes?
No, my right eye is completely gone, but I've got hopes for my left eye. As I've got cataracts, they're waiting to do an operation to remove the fluid in my eye. So hopefully with that and some glasses, I'll be able to read as my vision will get better.
So I want to move on finally just to discuss coronavirus with you and the impact of coronavirus on prison. But before I do, I just want to ask you this, Ahmed. Now that you've served your sentence and you've gone substantially blind, what do you have to say about prison?
If the rules were followed, it's the right place for some people, but it's the wrong place for a lot of people. And for those people, it's more or less like hell for them, and it's not fair. If someone's complaining, you should listen to them. Not everyone's wrong, not everyone's a liar, not everyone's a thief, not everyone's really a criminal. Some people do go to prison that have done nothing wrong, but it's just the luck of the draw.
Would you say that there are a lot of vulnerable people in prison?
Most certainly, especially with regards to mental health. There's a lot of young prisoners that prison, you can tell prison is doing them no good, and it's going to put them down a path where they're just going to be in and out with no regard, no. They'll be in and out without even them knowing why they're back into prison. They're learning no lesson. All they're learning is how to become a worse criminal, to be honest.
And being as fair as you can, what's your assessment of the way prison officers conduct themselves in the year 2020?
Most of them walk around like they're dictators, to be honest. Like, prison is their own kingdom, and they reward bad behaviour. And it's one rule for one and another rule for another person. If you're someone that is like an informer for them, that gives them information about other prisoners, you live like a king. If you're a person that just keeps your head down, follows the rules and gives them no reason for them to be on your case, for them to give you any warnings, it's a difficult part for you, to be honest with you.
So it sounds like you've left prison, not just for personal reasons, but in terms of your general assessment, feeling that there's a huge amount about prison life that's unfair and unacceptable. Is that a reasonable assessment of how you feel?
Yes, very much so.
And can I move on, as I said, to ask you about coronavirus? Because in the last few weeks of your sentence, coronavirus was a feature of prison life. Is that correct?
Yes.
How did you find out about coronavirus sort of hitting the prisons?
From the news, to be honest with you. And obviously inside the prison, you have some officers, they tell prisoners some stuff. And so you hear things. And then when you hear it, the same thing over and over again, you know it's something true.
And I think, you know, it's fair to say from what you've told us already that prison conditions, certainly your experience, are pretty bad. You said it was dirty, you're banged up most of the time, you're thrown together with people you don't know. I mean, how to what extent did prison conditions change once coronavirus had infiltrated the system?
They got worse, I would say. The prison always struggled with having cleaning supplies, toilet roll, kits for prisoners, simple, essential, everyday to day stuff. As Corona came, it was like an excuse for them to not even have it even more. I personally know a few people that had to use their own clothing as a substitute for toilet paper.
Hang on, is that what you're telling us? That in terms of sanitary protection, prisoners had to use their own clothes instead of toilet paper? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
For what?
For example, when they go to the toilet, or when if they want to, if they've spilled something,
right?
If they want to cover their mouth, so because towards the end, a lot of people wanted to cover their faces, so they used their own clothing.
So were any special sanitary provisions made once coronavirus had developed?
Not at all. You're supposed to get disinfecting, washing up liquid, soap bars from the prison to cleanse yourself and, you know, keep yourself clean. Those were not available, and if you did ask for them, you were answered back with a cheeky smile, telling you just buy it off the canteen, knowing that the canteen does not supply these products.
So to be clear, you must have been in prison for what, maybe a month, whilst coronavirus was a problem, if not more.
No, I would say 3 weeks.
3 weeks, and 3 weeks to a month.
Yeah.
And what you're telling us from your experience in a London prison is that the kind of things that the public are encouraged, you know, minute by minute to do, sanitization, washing your hands with soap, using disinfectant, cleaning products, that kind of thing, none of those facilities were made available to prisoners. Is that what you experienced?
Yes, that's exactly what I experienced.
And how did the prison population respond to that?
Some cared, some didn't. As I said, the ones that did care, they would actually just stay in their room and never leave. And if they did leave, as I said, they will cover up. And if they've got soap, and as soon as they get back, they'll wash their hands with soap. And a lot of them didn't care, to be honest with you.
And the prison officers, on the whole, did they appear to encourage prisoners to take extra precautions?
To be honest with you, the prison officers themselves weren't taking any precautions. They're the only people that are going in and out of the prison. So if we were to get coronavirus, it would be through them. When they come to work, they're not wearing no masks. Rarely are any of them wearing gloves. They're not even carrying hand sanitizers to show you that they are using when they were using it after they touched something. They didn't practice social distancing. All they cared about is putting you behind the door so they can leave home in time.
And on an individual basis, you've told us about your eyesight. You were obviously receiving medication. Were you classified as high risk?
Yeah, I was given a letter saying I was more vulnerable than others due to my medical condition. Like, if I was to contract coronavirus, I would probably get a severe version of it.
And apart from being given that letter, what, if anything, was done to protect your well-being?
Nothing, to be honest with you. Nothing at all. I was told that they would move me to a different wing to isolate me, to protect me from anything. None of that happened. All I heard of is certain people that it was confirmed that they had coronavirus. It was a very severe version of it, because you can tell from their physical appearance that they had it. They were moved to a different wing, and that wing was just one landing at the top of. So underneath there will be normal prisoners with healthy, like with no corona, and on the top floor there will be people with the corona.
And in terms of your state of mind, having been sent that letter but nothing being done about it, I mean, did that make you feel scared?
Yeah, it did very much. It made me feel scared and not confident in the. I know they're saying that they would help me and protect me, but I had no confidence in that. And I was just happy that I was leaving soon, to be honest with you. I reckon if I stayed there for another week or so, I would have probably got coronavirus and probably a severe version.
And in terms of the general atmosphere in prison, obviously it's not a pleasant place to be at the best of times, but would you say that the development of coronavirus and everything you've been telling us raised tensions significantly?
Yeah, it did. A lot, especially the people with mental health issues, they started self-harming more often. Just yesterday, I heard someone hang themselves. The thing is, if you've got mental health, you can't understand that there's a virus going on and then you're on a lockdown. But if the officers are not explaining anything to you, they just put you behind your door. They're not telling you there's a virus going on, you're on a lockdown. If you are mentally unstable, you need to be explaining things a bit more than anyone else. For example, you've got a cell bell, you press it for if you've got any emergency or any need. You press that, it will take them 2 hours to come, if they even come. And when they do come, they're not talking to you in a caring manner. They're not trying to understand. They're just trying to get away from as soon as they arrive to you to answer the bell. They just want to literally hear what you want to say and walk away, not trying to respond in any way to comfort you or to calm you down or anything.
So in terms of the way mental health prisoners are and were dealt with on a daily basis, is it fair to say you weren't impressed?
No, and I felt very, very bad for them. To my greatest ability, I would sometimes try to talk to them just to understand what's wrong and if I could help. And when I hear their stories, there was nothing I could do to help them. All I could do was maybe be a friend for the 30 minutes we're out. And I've got my own things to do, to be honest. But I did try, but I felt very bad for them, to be honest.
But in terms of your own mental health, Ahmed, I mean, bearing in mind the story you've told us, the psychological blow of you being there in the first place, the conditions you were in, the position relating to your eyesight, and then the invasion of coronavirus, you being classified as high risk, nothing being done about it. I mean, to what extent do you feel that your own mental health has been impacted by the time you spent in prison?
I'm not proud to say this, but it's the truth. I did one time go and see the doctor. I felt a bit depressed for a long period, and I still do. And he asked me why, and I explained to him, I feel like I've got no hope. I've lost my fair enough, I'm coming out an ex-convict. I might be able to get a job, but then I can't even read to continue. I can't even go back to university. So all of that started to took a toll on my mental health, and I began giving medication for it, which I'm not really happy with, because they give it to you at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, 4 o'clock in the evening, and then it makes you go to sleep, and then you wake up 9 o'clock, and it's just the same cycle all over again. It did affect my mental health, to be honest with you. I never thought I'd be someone suffering from something like this, but now I get medication.
And when you saw the doctor about the situation you've just described, what response did you get?
The doctor, he was an independent, the external doctor, so he was quite concerned, but he said he would refer me to the mental health team. But he told me by the time you probably see them, you'll probably be released. It takes them like 3 to 6 months to see you. And there was nothing he could do but give me medication to sedate.
And overall, bearing in mind the long and winding road you'd been on, were you given any support to help you go forward in life as your release date became imminent?
I had a caseworker. I did not see him. I only saw him once. And that was after a governor from the prison inspectorate came and saw me, asking me questions about how my experience in prison, and I answered him as truthfully as I could. The next day, my caseworker came and saw me for the first time, and this was like 3 months towards my release, telling me he needs to know everything. Someone's asking him about me, blah blah blah, and then I explained to him like, listen. I haven't seen you for a long time, at all, actually. and I need support. I'm blind. I can't see. Like, if you came and saw me, you would have known all this stuff. Why did it take for me to speak to a governor and from the inspector for you to come and actually put some concern? And when I did speak to him, and he's like, yeah, what do you want me to do? And when he said that, I just felt like, because I was told upon release, you would get help. Even my dad wrote a letter to the prison, and then they told him back that we will tell probation to look after him, to help him with his needs in his university if he was interested, and stuff like that. I did not experience any help. My caseworker made me feel like I was annoying him by asking him to help me out with, and all I wanted was advice. That's all he could give me. I wasn't asking him to do anything special, but give me advice, which is what his job was. Upon release, I got seen by resettlement people maybe like a week before I got released, telling me what I wanted to do when I came out. I told them I was looking to go back to university. They said they will set me up with some people to speak to. I never spoke to them. They never came. They asked me about job center, where I'm living, stuff like that. I think it was just protocol they were following. It was just a questionnaire, ticking boxes, and then that's it. Never heard from them after that.
Okay, so look, that again is, you know, a shocking tale. You're now out of prison. You told us at the beginning of this interview, we're now approaching the end, that you understood why you'd been sentenced to prison. Looking back now, having completed your sentence, do you feel you deserved the experience you were subjected to for the offences you had committed?
Not at all. I cannot imagine any offence would deserve someone losing their eye, ruining their future. You know, you go to jail to be rehabilitated, to learn your lesson and go on the right path. I can't even go into the right path if I wanted to, because I'm physically unable. And with regards to my mental health, I'm hoping when I do, you know, get an operation and my eyes get a bit better and I get back into university, hopefully my mental health will get better, as I would have something to look forward to, something to walk towards.
So what are your hopes now for the future?
I've been researching how I could get back into university if it's possible. I've still got my grades from first and second year, so if I could transfer those credits. I'm looking at my options, to be honest. It all doesn't mean anything until I fix my eye, to be honest. So I just don't want to be a vegetable sitting at home all day for the rest of my life.
And so ultimately, now that we've sort of travelled through your journey and you've explained things to us in very, very powerful terms, if you were able to send out a message to the Minister of Prisons in this country, certainly now that you've had the experience you've had, and you were able to convey a message to that minister, what would that message be?
Treat people like you would like to be treated. As I said before earlier, not everyone's a liar. If someone's complaining about something, don't let them be forced to performing a extreme act of violence or disorder just so you can listen to them. You know, if someone complains, just give them a few minutes, let them listen to what their problem is. Most problems could have been solved quickly and swiftly.
Are you, Ahmed, able, do you think, to forgive what's happened to you?
Not at this time, to be honest with you. Right now, I haven't even thought about forgiving what's happened to me. I'm trying to get over the hurdle, and then after that, maybe I could find it in myself to forgive them.
All right, well, look, you haven't been out of prison very long. You've given up your time to tell us your story. So I'd like to thank you for doing that, to wish you the best of luck for the future. And I hope that you're able to map out a journey for yourself which takes you forward positively in life. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much.
Throughout this podcast, all names have been changed for safety and legal reasons.
Thank you for listening. Join me again next time for another episode of Criminal Justice on Trial. Please don't forget to subscribe. And if you like what you heard, give us a good review. And if you have a story to tell, get in touch. Tweet us at justice_ontrial.